time for a Sales Manager Spotlight, brought to you by Death Wish Coffee, the world's strongest coffee. And we're going to be talking to some of the world's strongest and smartest sales managers.
What they like, what they fear, how they hire. Doesn't matter if you're a manager, doesn't matter if you're a salesperson, it doesn't even matter if you're just a person. You're going to learn something from these top leaders from around the country.
And with that, it's time to get this week's Sales Manager Spotlight. Let's go to the boss's office. I promise, this time, it won't be scary.
On the line now is Rich Burgrafe. He is the sales manager for Randolph Sterling Incorporated in Mooresville, North Carolina. Randolph Sterling is a sales solutions company with a goal to assist growth-oriented clients improve their overall sales and sales process. You can learn more about Rich's company at www.randolphsterling.com.
All right, Rich, tell us about who you are and what you do.
How do you pronounce your last name, Rich?
Burgrafe.
Burgrafe. Oh, that's pretty obvious.
Just a lot of extra letters in there. We were doing well on Wheel of Fortune one day. They just kept adding letters in.
It's probably worth $900.
Yeah, but you'd have to buy two vowels. Three vowels.
But it says that you're also a writer and a speaker. Tell me about that part.
I had an opportunity about 8-9 years ago. Actually, a publisher came to me and said, hey, you seem to know what you're talking about a little bit. And I'd done some speaking locally when I was out in Chicago. And they asked me to put a book together. I realized that it was a lot harder to take the things that I know what I'm talking about and try to make it into something that people actually want to read. Mm-hmm. So I did one. So I'm hoping for the second one. I have a lot of ideas around it. I just haven't put them all together into a book yet.
What's your first book called?
It's called Closing the Deal, Hot Sales Strategies to Make Money.
Cool.
That's pretty to the point.
You can get it on Amazon for either $9.99, 99 cents, or $99, depending on where you look.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Gotta love that.
Well, I would buy the book from you if it would include a gallon of Garrett's popcorn, caramel only.
Yeah, but he's not in Chicago anymore.
I know, but he has connections.
Oh, I do have connections. I do, and I'm right there with you, because don't mix the cheese in. It just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the cheese.
I hate the cheese. Well, then get your own damn bucket.
I do.
Okay.
Separate buckets. You can mix it to mix
exactly.
Yourself.
That's the secret of a great marriage. Separate bathrooms, separate closets, and separate popcorn.
Garrett's buckets. All right. So, Rich, what do you do now?
We figured that part out now.
So, what do you do now?
So now I run a kind of small sales consulting business called Randolph Sterling. So what I do is I help a lot of different size companies. So I've worked with some larger companies. Kind of have things in place and want to see like what's not working right. A lot of times I'm working with the small to medium-sized companies who kind of don't understand, like, hey, I have some cool stuff, and I don't know why more people aren't buying it.
Mm. And how do you help them? What do you do specifically?
So I'll do anything from, we have a small inside sales team, so we'll actually start the relationship with them a little bit. Or we'll do a lot of process development for them, and I'll even go in and be a sales manager on site for them and go in and work with their team. So I'll hire people and then work with them.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
And how do you assess them?
I go in and I spend a lot of time with them. And even if I'm putting it out to one of our other people, I'm still the one who's going to go in and say, you know, what's the issue here? What are you looking for? And to me, the big thing is, do they really feel that they have a product that they think can sell itself? Yeah. Or do they really want to understand the sales process?
Everybody wants to be Amazon and not have to have any salespeople. They just want to buy it now button, a buy now button, and, you know, click here if you want to buy it. It just doesn't work that way.
No. I'm curious how many companies actually have a product that sells itself.
None.
Okay, cool. Right. That would have been my guess.
Yeah, we agree on that.
And how many think they have a product that sells itself?
How many sales leaders do I talk to think that they do? That's a
Yeah. Would you say
And honestly, that's one of the things, and I'm looking forward to talking about, is one of the challenges I see is now that you have more tools out there and more information for people to see things, I see a lot of, especially in the technology space, companies that they say, oh, well, we can just, you know, we'll do a demo for them and then they'll just buy it. And they skip over that discovery part, and that just drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm. Do you use any kind of assessment tool right now? Do you use a DISC or any of the Myers-Briggs things that are out there?
I use a DISC a little bit. I have a colleague of mine who's kind of put his own proprietary one together that I'll use from time to time. And sometimes it just comes down to my gut feeling. I have said for a long time that I'm a salesperson that doesn't like salespeople. So when I find that they're either too salesy or they're too like, hey, we just can do this and we're fine, and they don't value it, that always ends up being the end of the day, the biggest thing I can go on.
Mm-hmm. So it's a rapport thing with you and your customer, and then it's a belief thing, correct?
Yes.
So you said sometimes you go in and they're acting VP of sales?
So I'll do that. And usually, I mean, it may be anywhere from a couple months to 6 months where getting them kind of set back up or finding somebody who can actually fill that role full time for them.
Tell us, when you're acting as an outsourced sales VP, what do you look for when you're hiring out their team?
Yeah, absolutely. So I look for people who, first of all, understand the sales process and have seen that and have gone through a good bit of that. I see more and more people who are getting into sales who have really only done a piece of it. And I don't always necessarily look for that person who is that top salesperson. I want them to really understand the process and the value of the relationship, because I feel like that's really where things get lost in sales and with that process piece, is that people try to skip that part too much. So I really want to make sure I'm finding somebody who gets that part and isn't going to take the quick turn to get the quick deal. I want them really thinking about long term.
You want to go from hello and demo to hello, rapport, demo.
Hello, rapport, understanding, and demo.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference. And in terms of the sales process that you mentioned, is it a specific process that you're hoping they follow, or do you have your own process?
We've developed a process over time, and I always say, like, I'm at the end of the day, I'm the simple sales guy. So try to keep things simple. And I always tell people, like, our process is we're looking for four things. So we want to look at the person who is going to, first of all, buy the product, who are the influencers in that product, who's the person who's going to use the product. So we want to really understand what's going on all sides of that. Then we look at the need piece of that. So what is it exactly? What's the problem they're trying to solve? What is the opportunity they're trying to create? And really make sure we understand that and make sure that we are properly addressing that, so that they, at the end of the day, when we're going for the close, they know that our solution is going to solve that problem for them. The third thing we look for is the money piece of that, is understanding not just the budget, but, you know, what can they spend and how can they spend it and how do they go about doing that? So when we get down to the point where we're presenting a solution, there's no question about where we're going to be. So at the end of the day, the plan is to have very little end negotiating, because that price part has already been kind of handled. And then the fourth piece to that is time. We can do all of that stuff great, and if they're locked into a 10-year contract, we're not going to close the deal. And it's the one I see that teams lose out on the most, that they forget about asking about, we have this great solution, when can we implement it? And understanding that so they know the process, so they can close at the right time. And we keep it simple. You find those four things, it's time to ask for the business. At that point, you get a heck of a lot more yeses than nos.
So let's back up. Where did you get your sales start?
I got a job working for a company called Wallace Computer Services, selling commercial printing. So my first role was literally going out and going into office parks and knocking on doors and seeing if I can get people to let me print stuff for them, and thrown out of offices all day long.
Oh, yeah. And occasionally you get a print job.
And exactly. And occasionally you get a print job. One of my favorite stories came from there, because I had the North Jersey territory.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, me being the one who knows, you know, knew so much after 6 weeks of training, I figured I'd knock on Toys R Us's door. And I found out very quickly that 10 years before, we'd messed up the print shop for them.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's not good.
Found that out just before she hung up on me.
That's so interesting. But in New Jersey, you can take it.
Well, I did what any New Jersey salesperson did. I called her back. I'm like, gee, I'm sorry, we got disconnected.
Yeah, exactly.
And she said, we didn't get disconnected. I hung up on you.
Yeah. That's so interesting.
That's amazing. I love that.
So I got enough business out of that at the end of the day, you know, 2 years later, so I could tell the story with a happy ending. I clearly did not retire from that deal, but at least I was able to find out what the issue was and work with it.
Cool. Yeah, that persistence is all about what exit of the turnpike are you from? Because if you're not from one of those exits, something's drastically wrong.
Yeah, I mean, in many parts of America, they wouldn't hang up on you. But Jersey or New York, boom, you know?
Yeah, and if they did hang up on you, you wouldn't have the balls to call them back.
Right, right. And I love that. I think we got disconnected.
Yeah, I did that a lot. I especially, when I cold called in New York City, I was literally banging on doors. And people would slam the door in my face and say, I have no time for you. And I would knock again. And I would say, did you mean no time now? Can I come back next week? And people.
That's the fun of it.
Yeah, that is the fun of it.
That's totally the fun of it.
Well, anyway.
All right. So how did you go from.
We'd get back and we'd say, we've thrown out a better building than this. Don't worry about it.
Exactly.
People in Charlotte, North Carolina, or the surrounding 1,000-mile radius, I need your help. I'm going to be doing two public seminars here in Charlotte, June the 14th, a leadership seminar, a sales leadership seminar, and June the 15th, a public sales mastery seminar, and you're invited. All you have to do is buy a ticket and show up. I'm going to be talking about things that will take you through this year and the next decade, and what you have to do to maintain your leadership position, set the standard, and make the money that you're hoping to earn. Go to cgittimer.com, cgittimer.com/Charlotte.
Hashtag Gittimer is back.
It's going to be a hootenanny.
Hashtag Gittimer is hootenanny.
Hashtag I'm going to rock your sales world.
So how did you go from salesperson selling door to door to sales consultant?
Well, I always liked the sales side, the sales management side of it. And of course, the company I was working for at the time, I was doing IT consulting back then, did what a lot of companies did. And they took their top salespeople and said, hey, we're going to make you a manager, which I always find interesting because I think the average top salesperson skills don't necessarily translate into sales management. I happen to really like it. So, and I started learning more about that. And they moved me out to Chicago to run the business out there. Yeah, loved it, but then I got to a point where I really wanted to help more people. So I ended up leaving the business and went out on my own and found that I had an opportunity to work with multiple companies and really enjoy that the most because I spent a lot of time, I learned something working with a manufacturing company and I can apply that to a staffing company. So I love the fact that I can go into different types of companies and take what I've learned there and take that basic skill and put it into different places.
I'm asking you two questions now. How do you generate leads?
Almost anyway. I mean, starting out from knocking on those doors to doing, we get a lot of referral business, more referral business than technology business. I'll put it that way of like just looking to see what are the businesses out there. But what we'll do a lot of times when we're getting down to straight old cold calling is we'll look at companies that we're working with that we feel we've done a good job with, reach out to companies that are similar to them, whether it's similar in size or it's similar in business of what they're doing. And we go in and our process is more, let me tell you more about what we've done to help these guys out and see if we can have a conversation about maybe doing something to help you.
So I want to go back to your sales leadership style and talk to us about what is one lesson that you must every single time you're leading a new team or working with a new team, you pass on to every one of their salespeople.
Don't jump to the close too quickly. It goes down to that. Let's find these four things. Because every time I see an issue with somebody that we're working with, it is because they didn't find person need money and time. And it can seem very simple. Sometimes I can find that in one call. Sometimes that may take a year. But the one thing I tell them all the time is if you hit up on all these things, the number of times you're going to have a price-related objection when you're going for a close decreases exponentially.
And have you written your book yet on person need, money, and time?
It's about halfway done. I'm through person and need.
Got it.
But how do you teach someone to back it up? So you find someone who's jumping to the close too quickly. Like, strategically, what are the things that they need to do to actually back it up?
It's going back to discovery is really where we, because I'll look at, well, how did you get here? Why did you feel it was a good time to go for the close? And a lot of times they don't even get an answer. So it's getting down into it that way and saying, you know, why, what did you do? Where do you have this? And pulling that right back out and say, okay, let's look at person need money time. Do you have all this? And they're like, well, I have this part, I have this part. And it's just, and it becomes just kind of a repetition. And a lot of times, especially when I'm dealing with technology companies, and it's kind of been a frustration lately, I get these guys who are like, well, because it was the 28th of the month and I needed to get the deal closed by the end of the month. So I figured I would just try to close it. And I said to him, I said, so let me ask, did you have the person come back and say, we'll do this for cheaper? And they say, absolutely. And then I say, well, let's not worry so much about trying to get it closed at a certain time. Let's make sure we get it done right.
Yeah, I agree with that. At what point of your process do you uncover the urgency of the need?
It's very dependent on what we're selling, but it's got to be something that we find relatively quickly, because we don't want to be spending, we're trying to make a short sales cycle into a long sales cycle. So we find the deepness of the need, I think, when we have found a level of trust with a client.
And then they'll cough it up. Do you have a question that you ask specifically?
We have 20 questions that we ask, because a lot of times it's not necessarily, like when we're talking about like staffing, for example, it's like, hey, we need a guy to do a project. And that's a pretty easy one. But a lot of times it's okay. You know, the expectation is you're a sales guy. You're coming to sell me something.
Mm-hmm.
And so our goal is to be like, hey, you know what? That's not what we're here to do. Like, we're here to understand what's going on. And if there's not an opportunity, that's fine. If things are great, that's fantastic. And a lot of times we take that process. You know, I tell people all the time, think about when you're going into the sales call, no matter where you are, figure out about 85, 90% of your quota. So you don't rush into things, figure I need to close this deal, mm-hmm. but you're still hungry enough. And so we're taking it in that process part is let's make sure we're doing it slow and steady, make sure we're doing it right. And again, going back to that time implementation thing, if I need somebody who needs something tomorrow, I can get it for you tomorrow, but I still need to better understand what's going on.
But isn't it in a direct disproportion to the sales manager who's got his foot up the sales guy's ass to make their quota by the end of the month?
It is. And, I have a lot of conversations with senior leadership at companies I work with. Do you want a long-term, sales, or do you want quick sales that are going to end up having to fix later or lose later? And I will say to the sales team, you know, your job is to sell. Your job is to get the good opportunity and close the deal the right way. You know, if it's a good deal today, it's a good deal tomorrow, and I want to close as quickly as possible. Don't get me wrong. But I don't want it trying to close it too quick, and I'll have that argument with upper management.
Yeah, that's a tough argument, though, because that sales guy, the sales leader, is measured by the results this month and then next month or the quarter. It's the end of the month. It's the end of the quarter. And they look at a number, and that guy receives his judgment at that moment in time, correct? We either made the number or we didn't.
But yeah, it's pretty black and white.
So absolutely.
Do you tell them in advance that you're going to make a sacrifice this quarter or next quarter to get to the next quarter?
If we need to, yes. Then we'll have that conversation. I don't want to make it sound like I'm advocating let's elongate the sales cycle unnecessarily. But one of the things that we'll look at is saying, what is your sales process? And one of the questions I ask, and I get pretty good answers on this, is, how often do you find yourself, because it's usually the sales leader who's doing it, who is coming in and saying, like, it's the end of the month, it's the end of the quarter. How often are you coming in and discounting a deal that you shouldn't have to discount just to get a deal closed? And they'll tell me, and they'll say, well, how often does that thing end up resulting in additional business for you? And if they're happy with that, I mean, honestly, if they're happy with that and that's the way they want to sell, then I'm probably not the person to be working with them. But usually they're not happy with that. And they're like, okay, I see this may be a short-term hit for a long-term gain. And how much of that can we hit? Now, I'm not going to say that we're going to push this all off, 100% of the business. It may be one or two deals that if you didn't get the stuff done, and it changes hard for everybody. So, I mean, that's the hardest part of it, is getting them on board with, hey, this process is going to be a little bit different. It may be tougher this month, but then we're going to be building the pipeline up right and have good deals going forward.
If you're a sales leader and you just heard this segment and you're thinking, man, I really should get that Gittimer Learning Academy, stop. You need to get the Learning Academy for your entire team so they can get better. And you can track, measure, and monitor everybody on your team after they've taken the assessment and learn about how good they are and or where they need help. And you as their leader can now actually coach them to victory.
If you're a strong, smart, successful sales manager and you want to be featured in our Sales Manager Spotlight series on Sell or Die, all you need to do is email sellordie@gittimer.com. If you know someone or you have a favorite sales manager who's amazing and should be featured, nominate them at sellordie@gittimer.com. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off. Sell or Die Hards, attention. If you love the show, make sure you have subscribed to the show.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes and give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend, tell both your friends about the best sales podcast on the planet.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true seller diehard, and we thank you.
Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.